Oh, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. I would much rather be in Indianapolis, as much as I like being with you. You have an excellent preacher here, and I like to hear him. But he wouldn't let me stay today. He said I had to come up here. So I'm glad to be here. And perhaps our studies will be useful. I'd like for you to look at a couple of passages in the scriptures. One of them's in Mark 6 and verse 3. Is not this the carpenter, the son of Mary, and brother of James and Joseph, Judas and Simon? Are not his sisters here with us? And they were offended in him. Jesus was a carpenter. And sometimes we are aware of it, but we're not that aware of it, so I want to think about it with you today. Same thing in Matthew, the 13th chapter, and verse 55. Is not this the carpenter's son? Is not his mother called Mary, and his brethren James and Joseph and Simon and Judas? So the people in his hometown were well aware of the fact that he was a carpenter. His father was a carpenter, he was a carpenter. He had learned to trade. Now, I won't do this too much to you, but every now and then I've been known to read poetry. So you're going to have to put up with a little bit. Entering the world at first breath, he cries. Joseph is flooded with joy and tears in his eyes. As this precious babe's life is passed in his care, he looks on his face, caressing his soft baby. What a wondrous blessing, he says to Mary, his wife. We've been given this child to foster his life. A moment in time to hold in our hearts. Alone with our son before his ministry starts. Instantly, their hearts are melted as one as he whispers his name, Jesus, the carpenter's son. Oh God, my Father, please guide all my ways. Help us to raise him. Joseph quietly prays. God said, Joseph the carpenter, teach him to build. Each creation he holds with the love I instill. Help him to see past the cold block of wood to a finished masterpiece and proclaim it as good. Teach him to work with his heart and his hands for one day. This child will build hearts of man. This is why you were chosen to raise my only son. He will build a bridge to humanity when he says it's done. You know, I'd like for you to think about it. You know, in antiquity, the artisan class was generally kind of looked down on. They weren't that high on the totem pole. Within Jewish society, though, to work with one's hands was deemed to be a worthy profession. It was essential that any father teach his son a trade. We've sort of gotten away from that. There's a lot of young people growing up who don't know how to do anything except search Facebook. That's another lecture for another day. One of the rabbis taught that whoever does not teach his son a trade, it is as if he brought him up to be a robber, which is about the truth. It was common for religious leaders to have a trade. Hillel, who was one of the great rabbis, is reported to have been a woodcutter. Shammai, who's start of one of the tremendous schools, was a carpenter. Both of those men were leaders of the two major schools of Jewish thought at the time. One a carpenter, the other a woodcutter. So Jesus was a carpenter. Perhaps you don't realize the tools available at the time Jesus lived were a lot like those used by craftsmen a century ago. Tools that required an edge were made of iron. Steel was less plentiful, lower quality steel. Planes were available. Some Roman planes had an iron sole. In addition, saws were available in the form of a bow saw. Most of you men know what a bow saw is. But some people refer to it as a Jesus saw because it was in all likelihood the type of saw that he used. And a handsaw. The handsaws that he would have used, that they used, were shorter than handsaws today to compensate for the lower quality steel, and they had a pretty sharp angle on their teeth. The adze was a popular tool, a horizontal blade that could accurately shape timber. A lot of old-time workmen lost a foot, or at least several toes using an adze, but it was a common tool. It was strapped to a handle taken from a tree limb or junction, or was very popular for smaller applications. Wood mallets for chisel work. Iron claw hammers were used. Chisels, socketed chisels, were very common in that day and age. The lathe. The lathe was used. It was very popular. A lot of people don't realize, a lot of people think a lathe is a modern tool, but it was very popular in Jesus' time. The quality of the surviving examples of lathe work are superior to a lot of modern-day lathe work. These men knew what they were doing. They did it every day. It was their livelihood. They lived by it. The brace was developed. We don't know if the brace was actually developed at this time, but they would use a bow drill. There's a picture of one here that they would use to drill holes. It's not exactly a power tool, a 24-volt power tool, but it worked fairly well. This was usually referred to as the golden age of woodworking. All major joinery elements were developed by this time. The mortise and tenon, which in case you don't know what that looks like, it's down here. The dovetail joint was developed at this time. So they knew those joints. That's what he worked with. He wasn't just out there pinning it together. A carpenter was needed to make everything. Framing for the roof of the house, you know that roof they tore up? They probably had to tear out some of the framing, too. It wasn't just shingles they were moving that we studied about in our Bible class. They made doors, frames for doors, and tables, and beds, and objects for eating, bowls, and cups, and all sorts of utensils. They would use those. There were also things needed for the farm. Plows, yokes would also be needed in all of these things. There's a ox yoke up there, and here's a neck yoke down here, which would have been used by just about everybody. You don't think they just carried one bucket, do you? That would be kind of silly. They'd carry two, and that's a sensible way to carry two if you don't want to grow a longer arm. Major building projects were going on at this time. Jesus, of course, the major building project at this time in this area was at Sepphoris. Herod Antipas was building his capital, the capital of Galilee, at Sepphoris. It was completely a Greco-Roman city. I don't think it's even mentioned in the New Testament because it was a Greek city. But they would have required the services of an enormous number of carpenters. And some have speculated that Jesus, who lived at Nazareth, just down the road from Sepphoris, and his father probably spent a lot of time working in Sepphoris, building the capital that Herod was building. There's a lot of references to it in the Bible, to the trade. In Matthew 7, "Whosoever heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them, I will liken him unto a wise man who built his house on a rock." You remember that, don't you? The rain descended, the floods came, the winds blew and beat upon that house, and it fell not. It was found. Don't you suppose that the carpenter would know the value of a good foundation? You might also notice some other passages. In the vineyard, There was a certain household which planted a vineyard and hedged it round about and digged a winepress and built a tower and let it out to husbandmen. This particular parable was the very parable that God Jesus killed. It was so pointed and so obvious. It may well have been the last parable of his life. They determined to kill him because of it. But then there's another one in Luke 14. If any man come to me, hate not father and mother and wife and children and brethren and sisters, yea, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. Whosoever doth not bear his cross and come after me cannot be a disciple. Which of you, intending to build a tower, sitteth not down first and counteth the cost, whether he hath sufficient to finish it? You know, I drive by every day. I got all these goofy building projects. You got sons that build. And one of them is I've wanted, you know, you have all these silly dreams in your youth. But I got a lake out in back of our house. And I always wanted to have a little fishing spot, you know, a little cabin built over the lake so I could just kind of sit out there in my old age and watch a bobber in the lake and catch fish and not be bothered by my 3,000 grandchildren. But I got so far, I put the pillars in. We even increased the pillars, big concrete pillars. We got those in, and I cut a bunch of oak to put out over it. And I drove by it the other day because that was several years ago. And I noticed that those nice oak timbers are beginning to crack and fall into the lake. They haven't built my cabin yet. And by the time they build it, I'll be too old to even crawl out there and sit on that porch and fish. But we all had those dreams when we were a little younger. Maybe my children will be able to build a cabin. But the Lord, do you see, he was talking about that. Don't you suppose that as a carpenter he had one or two guys who started to build and ran out of money? And it was ridiculous. There probably were people in the neighborhood you could go by and say, he began to build, was not able to finish. What a maroon. And so we go on. The statement, you know, Jesus says, come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and you shall find rest in your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. You know, Jesus was one of the master yoke makers in Nazareth. That statement may well have been placarded over his carpenter shop. My yoke is easy, and my burden is light. And he works it into this lesson. People would have come from miles around for a yoke, hand-carved. It had to be hand-carved and carefully crafted. And you know, as oxen are teamed up like that, when they're very young, about 6 months old, and the six-month yoke won't work as they get bigger. So you have to come back every so often to have a new yoke made. And then it has to be adjusted and fitted easily so that it doesn't gall the ox's neck. You can imagine a customer arriving, if you will, we're with me here, I'm going to get back. You can imagine a customer arriving and Jesus speaking quietly to the oxen. The man who's belongs to them, has driven them up there or led them up there. And there he's waiting patiently till the carpenter's finished. He would approach the animals so gently so as he doesn't startle them, he'd whisper to them. He'd measure their height, their width, their space between them, the size of their shoulders. He'd work slowly, take his time, until he satisfies that he knows the animals well and where their strengths are, where they might be vulnerable to too much weight, pressure, and he'd tell the man to come back in a week's time. And then he would deal with it. and gradually make this yoke to fit this ox. In Matthew 25, then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, Come, ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and ye gave me meat. I was thirsty, and ye gave me drink. I was a stranger, ye took me in. Naked, and ye clothed me. Then shall the righteous answer, he said, When saw we thee hungry, thirsty? When did we give you drink? The king shall answer and say unto them, Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as you've done it unto one of the least of these my brethren, you've done it unto me. And so, a carpenter has to remember his smallest customer. That was what Jesus was saying. If you took care of the smallest among you, you did it unto me. You know, sometimes we forget that. We imagine that if Jesus walked down the aisle, we would all bow down to him and treat him courteously, wouldn't insult him. But if we would do that to Jesus, we ought to do that to the simplest and smallest, just as you can imagine Jesus dealing patiently with those two oxen. While he fits them with that yoke. But there were other things. There was furniture that needed repair. You think about, what does a carpenter do? He repairs things. Oh, my wife. I got a little shop out back. And she fills it up all the time. See, you can fix it. She went down to see my daughter this weekend. Blessed time of peace in my home. But lo and behold, she came back and she said, there was a broken rocking chair. I know you can fix it. Said it's all sprung out in this. Anyway, I haven't seen it yet. Maybe a chair has a broken leg. The kitchen table's broken. We need the wood repaired. There's a big storm. There's a great tree that fell across the roof of the house. Caved it in. Jesus was a carpenter like that. And in addition, he was a spiritual carpenter. People brought him their broken lives. And he was able to repair them, just as he does today. In the larger workshop of humanity, men and women were going to be his craft. People broken by despair and hatred. Loneliness involving unforgiveness. Our brother spoke of that just a minute ago. By the way, it was very good comments about Ephesians 1. I admired your courage for taking it on. The emptiness of unfulfillment. Children and innocents are ready and willing for the first work of righteousness in their heart and need to be dealt with cautiously. People thrown away by society. You know, that's one of the things I've always admired about this church. You people are good people who take on some projects in people, and succeed. And I admire you for that, and I think so does the Lord, as he would have worked with them. We're going to sing this song, I think it's 8:15, for an invitation song. But I wanted to mention it now. It was written by L.O. Sanderson. Sanderson said, I had written the music but couldn't buy my dad, by the way. When I was conceived, my dad lived in Springfield, Missouri. So did L.O. Sanderson. That's where he was. And wrote many of the songs in your hymn book. My dad sang tenor and was in a quartet where they tried out most of those songs L.O. Sanderson wrote. But he says, I had written the music, but could not by myself come up with the lyrics. I sent the music to T.O. Chisholm and asked him to see what he thought most appropriate for the words. This poem was the result. Bring Christ your broken life, so marred by sin. He will create anew, make whole again. Your empty, wasted years, He will restore, and your iniquities remember no more. Bring Him your every care, if great or small, whatever troubles you, bring it all. Bring Him the haunting fears, the nameless dread. Thy heart He will relieve and lift up thy head. Blessed Savior of us all, almighty friend, His presence shall be ours until the end. Without Him life would be how dark, how drear. But with Him morning breaks and heaven is near. Just as they brought their broken furniture, Jesus worked on broken men too, to heal them and make them better. He can take that mess we've made, that awful mistake, He can begin to repair the damage and allow the healing to start. For instance, Matthew 12 says of Him, a battered reed He will not break off, and a smoldering wick He will not put out. There was a carefulness to it. You know, you approach that block of wood. I've got one like that right now in a barrel in my shop. Big old burl that we cut off of a tree. It's sitting there waiting for me to start working on it. You try to think about how a carpenter thinks. He's got this block of wood, but he sees that, you know, this block of wood is just an ugly thing that's sitting in my shop. It's just ugly. It just big old growth off the side of a tree. And you'd think, well, just throw it in the fire. It'll keep you warm. But the carpenter sees that block of wood differently than the way most people see it. It's got knots in it, he says. It's got cracks in it. It's got ink on it where they stamped it at the lumber yard. It's bowed a little bit. You know, all those 2x4s you won't take because they got a bow in them when you buy them. The carpenter doesn't look at the wood that way. The carpenter says, I can glue those knots back in. That crack can be fixed. The warp can be taken out of it with this plane I've got, or with a jointer. You've got jointers these days. He sees the potential of the wood, not the problems. And that, I think, is fairly important in life. He would work long hours, cutting out the refuse of old teachings in men's mind, chiseling at the edges of disbelief, hammering down the law of love, and sanding away the rough surface of self-righteousness in men. With a heart of compassion, hands that were gentle but firm, and an eye for perfection, Jesus worked at building and repairing, and it was the family business learned at the side of His Father. You know, a lot of people look at barn siding today. Man, it's ugly wood. It's been sitting out there weathering for years. We look at wood and say, man alive, that stuff's no good. Get the saw out, let's put it in a fire. That's not the way the carpenter sees it. He sees the potential in it. Christ looks at us today. He doesn't see all of our flaws. That's going to doom us eternally. Does He see those? Yes. But we see people's imperfections. He sees them and sees their potential. What can I do with this? Yeah, this is the, you're the human being. Old barn siding, you're weathered, worn, and cracked. What good are you now? Well, Jesus looks at you now, and He sees the potential in you, that He can work on you a little bit and make you something wonderful, something to line the family room with. Christ looked at a man who was a fisherman by the name of Simon and said, you're Simon, the son of John, you'll be called Cephas. Can you imagine what Peter's friends must have said on that occasion? Here he was, smelling of fish. He was just a fisherman, for goodness sakes. Jesus, come on, I'll make you fishermen of men. Jesus saw something in him, something worthwhile. You know, the Bible tells us in Ephesians 2, we're God's workmanship. You're just not a random assembly of molecules. You were handmade and one of a kind creation by Jesus Christ. You may not have been treated or respected by people as if you were valuable, but that's who you really are. You're His workmanship. And your Creator, the one who built you, made you, is the one who says so. We are God's workmanship, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which God prepared in advance for us to do. Now then, when God looks at you, when Jesus looks at you, it's like the carpenter looking at an empty room. The other people see a bare room, but they don't see what He sees. He sees what you were born to be. He sees what He created you, what you were born to be and can be if you'll allow Him to work on you. He's working today, working still and tirelessly. He's working on me. Out of this world's misery, He brought me and you to the worn workbench of His righteousness. And began repairing me with dusty and blistered and calloused hands and an aching back. Those are the hazards of being a carpenter. It hurts. Your hands are tough. They're not pretty. But He worked on us with blood-soaked, pierced hands and feet. And a broken heart. Those are also the hazards of a carpenter's life. You know, neither one of those really sound appealing. Most of us like to sit there at the computer and peck away. But Jesus worked on us. The rewards were immense. They were His life's passion, crafted with care. In Mark 6, He went out from thence and came into His own country, and His disciples followed Him. When the Sabbath day was come, He began to teach in the synagogue, and many hearing Him were astonished, saying, "From whence hath this man these things? What wisdom is this which is given unto him, that even such mighty works are wrought through his hands? Is not this the carpenter, the son of Mary, the brother of James and Joseph and Judah and Simon? Are not his sisters here with us?" And they were offended at Him. Jesus said unto them, "A prophet is not without honor, but in his own country, and among his own kin, and in his own house. And he could there do no mighty work, save that he laid his hands upon a few sick folks, and healed them. And he marveled because of their unbelief, and he went round about the villages teaching." Listen, this is just a carpenter. Who said he could work on men, save them, teach them? He's just a carpenter. God honors all honorable work. Don't ever be ashamed of what you're doing if it's honorable. And if you're doing your best at it, God honors that. He identifies with common people. Not necessarily with the princes of this world. You know, we spend so much of our time watching the president, the prime minister, the Hollywood elite, but the Lord doesn't spend that awful much time watching them. He identifies more with common folks. He was a carpenter for about 15 years, as best I could tell. And that emphasizes that God respects honorable work, even manual labor, just as a carpenter. That was a hard lesson, by the way, for the Jews to learn. Jesus didn't meet their concept of being a Messiah. He had been a carpenter from about the age of 15 on up. They expected the Messiah to be born in a palace. He wasn't. He was born in a stable. They expected Jesus to be born into a royal family. Millionaires, billionaires, the Hollywood elite. You know, I don't know if you follow it, but their children, all of them are in the movies, and they're all important. He wasn't. He was born by Virgin Mary with his father Joseph, and he was a carpenter. They expected Jesus to be raised and to be taught military skills. He wasn't. Didn't happen that way. There's a tombstone in Great Britain, and on the tombstone there's an epitaph. The man's name who was buried was Thomas Cobb. And the epitaph is, "Here lies Thomas Cobb, who mended shoes to the glory of God for 40 years." Do you do what you do to the glory of God? Jesus was a carpenter to the glory of God. He learned his lessons. He learned what it was. You know, who can write a musical composition like Bach? On every piece he wrote, he put the letters SDG. It's Solo Dea Gloria. To God alone. Whether it's manual labor, whether it's mental labor, whether we're involved in some kind of other profession, we can still glorify God with the kind of work we do. You can talk to the people who work along with you. You can talk to the people that you sell to. You can talk to your boss. And when he gets the idea that what you're doing You're doing to God, he might start listening. You're not just slapping something together. It's not just unimportant. It matters to you. And you're serving the Lord. Well, the Lord could have chosen to die, by the way, a number of ways. He chose to die a carpenter's death. Why did he go through that? The carpenter died on a wooden cross to bring about our redemption from sins. It was a fitting way for such a carpenter to depart. He could have been beheaded. He could have been stoned like Stephen was. Could have been beheaded like Paul was. He chose to die a carpenter's death. Wasn't forced upon him. Now, if you're here this morning and you're not a Christian, I want you to have learned maybe two or three things today. One, I want you to have learned that God cares about you, even though you may not be perfect, that he can make something beautiful and wonderful out of you if you will just let him. Will you let him? I want you to understand the importance of what you do. You know, not everybody has to be big, the boss, the big cheese, a millionaire. He likes you and what you do, if it's honorable. Now, if you would like for him to begin that process of making you beautiful and something better and giving you hope in life, we're going to sing this song. We'd like for you to come. He's going to perform that workmanship on you by asking you to believe that he's the Son of God. He's given you evidence. He's going to ask you to turn away from your sins that are destroying. He's going to ask you to admit that publicly for the rest of your life. And he's going to ask you to be baptized. He that believeth, in Mark 16, and is baptized shall be saved. And then he's going to continue to work on you till the day you die, just as any carpenter would. He never finishes. There'll always be something he sees he can make better. Come while we stand and sing.